Every day, about 100 Americans are killed by guns. And yesterday, an officer shot an armed male student at Waukesha South High School after the student pointed his gun at officers. And from what we know, the suspect is in stable condition. Researchers call it a public health crisis, a gun epidemic, but they also say it's possible to save lives while respecting gun owners' rights. That this shouldn't be a political juggernaut. Where do you see openings for safety? Do you think the issue is more about a lack of gun control or a matter of improving mental health services? Are you a parent or student at Waukesha South High School? How are you feeling? Join in 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. Dr. Megan Ranney is an associate professor of emergency medicine at Brown University's Alpert Medical School. She is chief research officer at the American Foundation for Firearm Injury Reduction in Medicine, or AFFIRM Research. It's a nonpartisan network of healthcare professionals and researchers working to reduce gun violence. Dr. Ranney, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here this morning.
You say that there is ample evidence that gun violence is not a mental health problem. Can you help us decipher that, pull that apart for us?
Absolutely. I think it's really easy for us to say, gosh, someone has to be crazy to shoot someone else, right? But there's so much evidence that the mass shootings that we are so afraid of are not due to mental illness. It's a trope that makes us easy to blame something that we're scared of. Now, 2/3 of deaths, gun deaths in this country are suicides, and those are certainly related to untreated mental illness. But in general, when we blame gun violence on mental illness, we do a disservice both to successful efforts to prevent gun violence, and we do a disservice to folks who are mentally ill and are seeking help.
You've pointed out that there is a stronger correlation between gun violence and other issues like domestic violence. What do we know there?
So we know that a history of domestic violence perpetration significantly increases the chance that you are going to hurt someone else in the future. It is one of the highest risk factors for perpetrating gun violence. Substance use is another very common risk factor for perpetrating gun violence against someone else. So there are things out there that we know of that we could actually take action on rather than blaming the mentally ill.
What impact do mass shootings have on how we approach this epidemic?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I think for so many of us, mass shootings are the things that have made us pay attention to gun violence, right? I'm a parent of two kids who are currently getting ready for a delayed school day here in Rhode Island, thanks to snow. But I'll be honest, there is never a day that I put them on their school bus where I don't think about the risk of mass shootings. We know that the rate of mass shootings, particularly mass school shootings, is going up. And it is something that I think every parent and community member is scared of. However, mass shootings are really less than 1% of gun deaths nationally. It's far more common for one of our kids or family members to die of gun suicide or gun homicide, depending on who we are and where we live. So although mass shootings are something that should be a never event and that we must work to stop, they are the minority of gun injuries and gun deaths in this country.
Let's bring in a call now. Christine joining us from Sauk City this morning. Hi, Christine.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. What is your story?
I was in the shooting that was here in Middleton, Wisconsin. The shooter was Anthony Tong. All I wanted to do was go to work that day. But he started shooting about 10:15 in the morning. Officers came immediately. And as I laid on the floor, scared to death, I couldn't even breathe, wondering if I was going to make out of it, listening as he filled the gun with bullets, shooting at my coworkers, that it comes down to that he was mentally ill. So as far as people saying that it's not mental illness to me plays a huge role. It's changed my life. I cannot go out to public events because I'm scared to death to be around people. And it's a year later, and working with a therapist for a year, it doesn't... When people say it's not mental illness, it is.
Christine, thank you so much for sharing your story and for sharing how you are doing today. Dr. Rani, what do you see there?
Yeah. Oh, Christine, first of all, my heart goes out to you. And I am so sorry that you experienced that. And I'm so sorry to all the other Americans that have been through this. And you're right that being exposed to this, whether it's being exposed to an actual shooting or the fear of it, increases our risk of post-traumatic stress and anxiety and depression. And I am so glad you have a therapist to work with. I am not arguing that some shooters are mentally ill, and I don't know all the details of your experience in Middleton, but there are certainly some folks who are mentally ill who commit these horrific acts. But many of them are filled with hatred or are using substances and don't meet traditional definitions of mental illness. There's a bigger underlying cause. Do we need to pay attention to mental illness? Absolutely. But when we only blame that, we're not going to get to the root cause of this epidemic that we're facing, and we're not going to be able to fix it.
We're talking with Dr. Megan Rani, who is an emergency physician. We're looking at gun violence in America, what the public health response should be. What do you think would be an effective response to this epidemic? What do you want researchers to study? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll continue this conversation with physician Megan Rani this hour on the Ideas Network. We're looking at gun violence as a public health crisis, and as such, there is no single solution. Yesterday, we saw the Supreme Court took up a Second Amendment case. Meanwhile, over in the research community, scientists point to the Dickey Amendment back in 1996 as having a chilling effect on gun-related studies. So what safety steps make sense to you? Are you staring down a public health crisis in your own neighborhood? Join in 800-642-1234. Dr. Megan Rani is an associate professor of emergency medicine at Brown University, and she stays with us. Dr. Rani, how does the association between gun violence and mental illness, how does it affect how these people with mental illness view themselves?
Yeah, so by making an association between gun violence and mental illness, it hurts our communities in two ways. First, it stops us from making progress on gun violence prevention, on addressing real risk factors, low-hanging fruit that we could do something about to decrease the risk of gun death in our communities. But second, it stigmatizes those who need help. You know, I grew up in Western New York, my parents lived in Michigan, and I have many friends in Wisconsin. When you live in a community that has high rates of gun ownership, and you say that gun violence is about mental illness, you're saying to folks who own a gun that if they have mental illness and get treatment, that somehow they are more dangerous than the other people in their community. You're going to stop them from getting treatment and increase their risk of hurting themselves. That's not fair to them. When we blame gun violence on mental illness, we are hurting those people in our community who are most vulnerable. It is a really illusory truth. It distracts us from the real underlying issue here.
Let's bring in Owen now, joining us from Waiwega. Hi, Owen.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, Kate. Good morning. I'm a little bit concerned because I think that, you know, we use the label mentally ill when it behooves us to. For instance, people that are under the influence of drugs and alcohol, I believe are mentally ill because they're using substances to fill some sort of void in their lives. And we're choosing to incarcerate people with those illnesses instead of treating them properly with medical care that they probably should receive before they receive punitive measures to try to correct their behaviors, because it is a mental illness. I strongly believe that.
So what is the correlation, do you see, Dr. Rani, between substance abuse and gun violence?
Yeah, so about 30% of people who shoot someone else or who die of gun violence are intoxicated on alcohol or substances at the time that they die. So there absolutely is an association there. And we're seeing a rise in quote-unquote deaths of despair across the United States, whether it's opioids or gun suicides. there is an underlying issue that we have to address. But by blaming it just on mental illness, again, we're distracting ourselves from those real underlying issues that we can come together and create solutions to.
When you look at the research that is underway around the country and the dollars that are there to back this research, what is the most pressing need right now to figure out here on where we do take the next steps?
Yeah, so there is less than 2% of the funding that there should be to address gun violence across the country. And that's true because of this Dickey Amendment that was passed in 1996, which basically took all the money away from the CDC that they had been spending on gun violence prevention. As a result, the amount that we have spent or dedicated to addressing this issue for the past 23 years is virtually zero. Now, imagine we said that for heart disease or for cancer. We wouldn't accept it. So when you ask what the most pressing priority are, there are so many. Certainly, gun suicide is a huge issue. Two-thirds of gun deaths in this country are suicides, and it's something that every community has been affected by. But there's really basic low-hanging things that we can do. You know, we know that mass shooters, most of them have 5+ risk factors that are seen by folks before they commit the crime. We could do, and some of us are trying our best with Affirm Research and with other organizations, to do the life-saving research to help us identify those folks earlier and to stop shooters before they shoot. There's so much low-hanging fruit that we can address and that we're trying to do through our coalition at Affirm Research and through work with other organizations across the country.
Talking with emergency physician Megan Ranney, who is talking about the effects of gun violence in America through the lens of a public health crisis. Researchers have struggled to study violent deaths for more than 2 decades. Do you think gun rights and gun control activists can find compromise? What would that look like? Do you help people in mental distress? Do recent conversations around mental illness and gun violence have an effect on the people you work with? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a moment to continue this conversation with Dr. Megan Ranney here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about gun violence in America. Late last month, Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin joined 23 of her Senate colleagues calling on the Appropriations Committee to include $50 million in funding for gun violence prevention research at the CDC. And in that letter, the senators pointed to the string of mass shootings that have occurred since they last wrote to urge funding. So where do you see common ground? Is it more research? Where do you see flaws in the conversation around gun violence? Are you a parent or a student at Waukesha South High School? How are you feeling? Do you think this incident yesterday changes how you feel about guns? We're at 800-642-1234 to join in, 800-642-1234. Dr. Megan Ranney is Chief Research Officer of the American Foundation for Firearm Injury Reduction in Medicine, and she stays with us. Dr. Ranney, let's go back a decade and this really pivotal moment in your career in emergency medicine as you see this young person come through your emergency department with a gunshot. What happened?
Oh, so it was about a decade ago. I was working in my trauma rooms on a Saturday night, and we got a call over the radio that EMS was coming in with a trauma code, which meant that it was someone who was a trauma who had lost pulses. And when they rolled in, it turned out that it was a young man who had a gunshot wound. And it wasn't the typical gunshot wound that we see on a Saturday night in an urban environment. It was a man who had shot himself in the head. We were unable to save him. And one of the things that stuck with me out of this incident was it was the one and only time in almost 15 years of practice that I've seen someone come through my doors who shot themselves. And it started me looking at what were the reasons for that? Do people often shoot themselves? And it turns out that 90% of the people who try to hurt themselves with a gun die before they ever make it to the ER doors. So I never have the chance to save them. The other thing about this young man's story that stuck with me was that he shot himself with his father's gun. He knew where it was. He knew how to access it. And seeing that dad at the bedside was a moment that really changed my trajectory and made me commit to fighting this epidemic with all of both the empathy and also science that we have to bear in medicine. We could have saved that young man's life had we kept him from being able to get a hold of the gun at that moment. And that's so much of the work that I do today. It's not about demonizing gun ownership, but it's about keeping people safe who are at high risk. And it's about empowering gun owners to be leaders in this movement for safety. You know, the story that I just heard about Waukesha, how did that young man get a hold of a handgun? He wasn't of legal age in Wisconsin. How could we have identified that he was at risk and gotten him help so that those kids and parents weren't traumatized yesterday?
There have been calls for policies like a mandatory buyback of assault weapons from their owners. And a recent poll here in Wisconsin found that more than half of people are opposed to this kind of policy. Where do we go on policy then? Is gun control the answer to the issue?
So I think we have spent far too long debating gun control versus gun rights instead of talking about gun violence as a health problem with prevention strategies, the same way we talk about heart disease or car crashes, right? We can change the conversation. Policy may be part of it, but things like gun buybacks aren't going to work in the vast majority of this country. That's just not a viable policy. What can work is looking at risk factors and addressing those the same way that we did for car crashes. Listen, we've decreased car crash deaths by over 70%, not by taking away cars, but by changing car safety, by educating people about drunk driving, by getting people to use car seats. We can do the same thing for gun deaths. But it takes a little bit of muscle on our part. It takes a commitment to changing the way that we talk about this, and it takes a commitment to creating the research that can really make a difference. Again, the same way that we've done for cars.
When you talk about it as a public health crisis, you look at it through this lens as a series of steps, as you would look at any public health epidemic. What does that lens look like?
Yeah, so that lens looks like using the same techniques that we've used successfully for other epidemics across history. It's first figuring out who's getting injured or killed and why, then figuring out what works to stop it. And we have some ideas, things like helping people who are in a suicidal crisis to have a safe place to store their gun until they get help and are feeling better. Things like reducing access to guns for people who commit domestic violence. There's some really, again, simple solutions out there that we just need the energy and the funding to put in place. And then the third thing is making sure that those solutions work. Our country doesn't need any more solutions based on high emotion, right? Or based on politically polarized viewpoints. What we need as a country are solutions that actually make a difference and that we can put in place today, where we don't have to wait for the legislature to act, but things that we can do as individual school districts or parents or families to keep our kids and our communities safe.
If you're just joining us.
And that's what that public health looks like.
And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Dr. Megan Ranney, who is an emergency physician researching ways to reduce gun violence. Let's go back to the phones now. Jean is joining us from Richland County. Hi, Jean.
Howdy. My comment is that I feel like this issue has been really politicized, even though a lot of people in the right, you know, would like to have it not that way and address it for what it is. But when you look at it, you can't sit there and say that it's just merely the gun when you have people take their lives in other several other ways, and they do have access to a gun that choose not to do it that way. You know, it's just it has to be looked other than just it being the gun and being more at the state of the person's mind that needs to be addressed. Of course, yes, I agree that make it less easy for a gun to be accessed to a person of that state. But I feel like there's a better way about going about this. And that's pretty much it.
Jean, thank you so much for joining in. Dr. Ranney, Gene says, there's a better way to go about this.
Yeah, Gene, thank you so much for that comment. So the vast majority of gun deaths in this country are suicides. And the majority of suicide deaths in this country are from guns. It's the fastest rising cause of suicide deaths. So I agree with you that we need to address the underlying issues that make someone want to hurt themselves. But we also have to make sure that we have the best possible chance of helping them. And if someone tries to hurt themselves with a gun, we have virtually no chance of being able to save their life. For any other method of trying to hurt oneself, you can make it to me in the ER. I can save you, and then I can get you the help that you need. So it's not about demonizing guns, but it's about instead empowering gun owners, gun shops, gun ranges, families of folks who are going through crises to help save the life in that moment of crisis. So it's really about changing the conversation and about talking about reducing risk and reducing access in that moment.
Let's bring in Joe now in Madison with thoughts on this. Hi, Joe.
Hi, thank you. I think what is missing, I haven't heard the entire discussion, but that we've normalized the bullying of boys. Boys are bullied constantly growing up. And I think inside of most males, there's someone craving revenge. It doesn't have to be rational. It doesn't have to be logical. They're not turning around and shooting the person, perhaps, who bullied them. But to look at the bullying of boys and that boys feel unsafe, and then you give them a bazooka, you know, to protect themselves, I think that's where a lot of the violence is coming from, and domestic violence.
Hmm.
Boys are witnesses to, and girls, but are witnesses to massive amounts of domestic violence. And boy, that we teach boys still this sort of outmoded notion of you're supposed to protect the girls and women in your life. And I remember years ago reading that 75% of the people that boys kill, these are incarcerated boys for murder, they killed their mother's abuser.
Well, Joe, I want to jump in here and let Dr. Rani respond as we're short on time.
Yeah, so I agree that we have to look at the underlying causes. And some of the work that we're doing at Affirm Research is looking at bullying and social media and how that plays into this epidemic. You're right that we can't label a single cause. We have to address the things that happened before it. And that's what this public health approach is about. It's about giving people better conflict resolution skills. It's about improving coping, reducing domestic violence, and stopping that trajectory, but also identifying when folks are at that tipping point and getting them help.
Dr. Rani, as we wrap up, how do you envision physicians and public health workers in the circle of people that you work in professionally, how do you see them coming together around this issue?
So one of the things that has been most hope-filled for me is seeing over the past decade how doctors and nurses and other healthcare professionals have come together to say that gun violence is a preventable public health problem, and that when we apply these classic public health principles to this epidemic, we can change it the same way that we've done for other epidemics. I have seen a sea change in the way that we talk about gun violence within the medical profession over the last decade, and I'm so happy to see that starting to happen in the larger community as well through conversations like this one on public radio, because together we can create change. And I am already seeing signs of hope in many of the communities that we're working with at Affirm Research across the country. And discussions like this one today on Wisconsin Public Radio make a huge difference in our ability to create changes that work for our communities, our states across the country.
Dr. Rani, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Dr. Megan Rani is an associate professor of emergency medicine at Brown University's Alpert Medical School. She's chief research officer at the American Foundation for Firearm Injury Reduction in Medicine, or Affirm Research. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.